Good morning. Coming up today, we hear from the Canary Islands, where a famous footwear designer from La Palma has just won a major trademark battle in China. While in Nigeria, authorities are stepping up efforts to combat internet scammers. But first, to Australia, where 3 weeks of national celebrations for Aboriginals have just concluded. While cultural Aboriginal knowledge is taught in schools, it's still not part of the mainstream curriculum in Australia, and discrimination persists at various levels against the Indigenous people. These celebrations aim to promote Aboriginal culture, as well as entertain and educate. From Queensland in Australia, Isabel Conway sent this report.
Brigitte Chilly smiles broadly, hugging visitors, warmly welcoming us to Gabi Gabi country. We sit on the deck of an old wooden sailing skiff, listening to Brigitte, whose forehead is decorated with white dots, denoting her high tribal status. She begins a melodic chant, calling up the spirits of her ancestors to bestow a safe passage for the Indigenous river cruise we're going on. Brigitte keeps time with her well-worn clapsticks. Made of hardwood from the eucalyptus tree, these ancient instruments are used to maintain rhythm during Aboriginal songline stories and ceremonies. The sound they emit is haunting, ancient, mysterious, reverberating across a modern yacht marina here on southern Queensland's Sunshine Coast. "This is our land, has been for aeons, and I own it," she declares. With a laugh, she stretches one arm towards the faint outline of the Blackall Mountains in the far distance, the other to the river mouth at the end of one of Australia's wealthiest stretches of waterway. At Mululu Apa, as far as the eye can see, multi-million dollar villas, Santa Monica meeting the Hamptons, stretch cheek by jowl ahead. An elder of the tribe whose roots stretch back tens of thousands of years in these parts, Brigitte has much to sing about today. She's just officiated at a ceremony to welcome two long-awaited Aboriginal police liaison officers. They've been trained to assist the Queensland Police Force working among the Indigenous community. The annual NAIDOC, National Aboriginal and Islands Day of Celebration, for 3 weeks in July nationwide, was just winding down here on the Sunshine Coast, with events about Indigenous culture, progress, pathways to reconciliation and healing still going on. "The appointment of the liaison officers was a highlight," Brigitte explains, "to promote understanding of Aboriginal customs, help solve disputes and promote better relations with the police. A lot of pain, maltreatment and injustices has been suffered by our community at the hands of the judicial system," she tells me. "We need a presence, a voice representing us. Brigitte's grandmother's grandmother was named Colleen, the daughter of an Irish woman who married Charlie Chilly, who was given his surname by the white settler family who employed him. A grandmother in early middle age herself, Brigitte remembers growing up when Aboriginals barely had a voice. She was not allowed to talk about who she was or about their rights. It was hard in the past. We didn't encounter much racism, but my grandmother would always warn me not to talk about our culture. It was taboo to do so." Whilst cultural knowledge is taught in schools across Australia, it's officially not legally in the mainstream curricula, and discrimination persists at various levels. The First Nation continues to be underrepresented at many levels of society, including further education and in local and national government. Indigenous tourism has taken off in Australia, though, and it's a way of fostering understanding and breaking down prejudice, as well as providing employment. Torres Strait Islands-born skipper and owner of our sailing sketch, Simon Tornalley of Saltwater Cruises, says some passengers were hesitant about the experience at first, fearing a confrontation by asking questions about Aboriginal history and culture. "We chug along towards the coastal river mouth. Gabi Gabi storyteller Brigitte describes the land of her ancestors, their deep spiritual bond with that land and their relationship to it for thousands of years before the arrival of early Europeans. Land conflicts, dispossession and decimation of Gabi Gabi populations in massacres, shootings, poisonings and widespread death from imported diseases are long forgotten in the spirit of reconciliation and healing. Gabi Gabi pathways became roads, ceremonial camping grounds were turned into recreational spaces, and the wild scrubland where Brigitte's forefathers lived here on the banks of the Mulula River is today prime real estate lined with mansions. Passing them, she gives a resigned shrug. Rich folks chase the water. What makes me sad is that many of our own people don't have a house, nor a bit of ground to put one on our own ancestral lands. In southern Queensland, Australia, I'm Isabel Conway for World Report.
Next, in Nigeria, cybercrime and scams have evolved from letters and faxes to email phishing, identity theft, and more recently, romance scams. Now, authorities are stepping up efforts to combat the internet scammers with stiffer penalties for those committing such crimes. However, they face a stiff task, with many people who engage in this activity willing to do everything possible to live a luxurious life in a country where a get-rich-quick mentality is prevalent. From the Nigerian capital of Abuja, Pullum David reports.
From the days of the Nigerian prince email scam stories, cybercrimes have now evolved from letters and faxes to email phishing and social media account hacking to romance scams, business email compromise fraud, identity theft, impersonation, among others. Well, the Nigerian government has decided enough is enough and are cracking down on these fraudsters. These criminals generate huge business transactions that look too good to be true and shady business deals running into millions of dollars. They use VPN applications to hide their locations, photo manipulation softwares to produce fake appearances and take advantage of Bitcoin anonymity to receive fraudulent proceeds and create web pages for phishing and more. As more people became alert about internet scams, they resorted to using spiritual and metaphysical powers to hypnotize or control their victims for the time they are on their radar so that victims will send whatever amount of money they ask for without thinking twice. Some even go as far as killing people, harvesting their organs and other fetish practices just to get powers. These guys also take drugs and hard substances to harden their hearts. Look, as a Nigerian, it's annoying to know that somebody somewhere thinks all Nigerians are fraudsters simply because some bad eggs have adamantly refused to make money the legal way. They rather sit down in some corner and swindle money off people. It's even more frustrating to see that the people who carry out this unscrupulous act are very young adults who want to do everything possible to live the luxurious life. There is this get-rich-quick syndrome. Some parents even fund this fraudulent ambition because they want to boast that, hey, my son bought me the latest car and a big mansion. They don't question their children's source of income. Some young people even drop out of school to focus on being a scam artist. Surprisingly, these guys are proud of their craft as they shamelessly display their ill-gotten wealth all over social media. Some even go as far as driving recklessly on the road and spraying money in the air. For example, Hush Puppy, a renowned internet fraudster, constantly displayed lots of dollars, his luxurious cars and private jets, and designer wares. He was later arrested in Dubai in 2020. Yahoo Boys have become favorite tenants of some house owners as they believe this group of people are willing to pay exorbitant rents for very little spaces just so they can carry out their atrocities away from the prying eyes of the public. Nigeria's Advanced Fee Fraud and Other Fraud-Related Offences Act provides for a prison term of between 5 and 15 years without option of fine for any person who permits his premises to be used for any offence under the Act. Some hotel owners also work with suspected fraudsters by housing them over a long period and making internet facilities available to them. Chairman of Nigeria's Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, Abdulrasheed Bawa, recently met with hotel owners to talk to them about working with security agencies to curb cybercrimes. Nigeria's criminal code clearly frowns at obtaining money from people through pretense or impersonation, cheating, falsification, counterfeiting, forgery, and fraudulent representation of facts. Authorities almost on a daily basis parade arrested criminals caught for internet fraud. Last year, there were 2,220 cybercrime convictions, and authorities say 98% success was recorded in prosecutions. Some ended up in jail with very light sentences, and it's annoying because we expect weighty punishment to translate to high possibility of deterrence. But when a man swindles people of about $2.5 million and gets a fine of about $200, it not only fails to deter, but also becomes an incentive. Nigeria's Cybercrime Prohibition and Prevention Act of 2015, under which many of the cybercrime cases are prosecuted, prescribes 7 years imprisonment for convicts of identity theft and impersonation. Also, anyone who without authorization accesses a computer network for fraudulent basis and gets materials that is crucial to national or individual security commits a crime punishable by up to 5 years imprisonment or a fine of up to $10,000 or both. In May 2019, a judge of a federal high court in southwestern Nigeria, Joyce Abdulmalik, sentenced an internet fraud star Oladimeji Abiola to 1 year instead of 6 months proposed in the agreement. She said liberal sentencing would not achieve deterrence, which is meant to be the spirit of the law. In another scenario in November 2021, Justice Iyang Eko of the Federal High Court in Abuja refused to give an optional fine to a scammer named Ajayi Oyokunle, who was convicted for defrauding an American. She slammed him with a two-month jail term. Last year, $6 trillion was lost to cybercrimes globally. US-based cybersecurity ventures forecast it to reach $10.5 trillion by 2025. It's clear now that the Nigerian authorities want to fight this type of crime and say goodbye to the Nigerian princes who email you looking for money. For World Report, this is Polum David in Abuja, Nigeria.
Finally, to the Canary Islands. I've always been obsessed with lightness and structure in both a tactile and aesthetic sense. So says Manolo Blahnik, the go-to designer for all footwear. But did you know he's from one of the Canary Islands? From there, Cliona O'Flynn looks at the background of one of La Palma's most famous sons and the company that won a recent trademark battle in China.
These days, the Canary Islands are known primarily as a holiday destination, with sunshine practically all year round, a variety of coastal destinations, relatively cheap prices for tourists. Certainly, it's the sun, sea and probably sangria that spring to mind when the Canaries are mentioned. But the islands also have a fair smattering of famous people. Maybe outside these islands, they're known simply as Spanish. But Canarians are fiercely proud of their daughters and sons who've achieved global greatness. Footballer David Silva, actor Javier Bardem was also born here. But up there among the eternal stars has to be one Manolo Blahnik. Even if you're not a fashion follower nor a fan of Sex and the City, you will have heard of this son of La Palma. The man who is to footwear what Enzo Ferrari is to cars. He took the shoe and made it the have-to-have fashion accessory. Owning a pair of Blahniks is enough to elevate your status. No need to even mention the word shoe. While fictional character Carrie Bradshaw maybe helped bring Manolo to a huge audience, he was already a well-known and highly sought-after shoe designer. But once Sex and the City adopted him, Manolo's became a style and status essential in New York and soon everywhere else. And at least 500 euros a pair, owning Manolo's isn't for everyone, though soon for a lot more in the Asian world, but more of that later. Manolo Blahnik was born in 1942 in Santa Cruz de La Palma, one of the smallest of the Canary Islands, recently all over the news due to the months-long volcanic eruption. His Czech father met his mother on a stopover, promised to come back, and he did. They married and set up home on a banana plantation. But their son was to follow a different path, a well-heeled one, you might say. Manolo and his sister Evangelina were homeschooled and then attended a Swiss boarding school. And his mother, very much interested in fashion, frequently brought the young family to Milan and Paris to see the latest styles. His parents apparently did hope that young Manolo would enter the diplomatic service, but he instead studied literature and architecture in Geneva and moved to Paris to study art. During his time there, he worked in a vintage clothing store and fashion took hold as he then moved to London to work as a clothes buyer while writing for Italian Vogue. In New York, he met Vogue editor Diana Vreeland, who told him, "Young man, make things, make accessories, make shoes." He followed her advice, and I suppose the rest is footwear history. This Palmero now lives in Bath and has stores in London, New York, Madrid, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Hong Kong, Tokyo, and many more top cities, but to date not in Beijing. That, however, now finally looks set to change. This month, after a 22-year-long trademark battle, the Manolo Blahnik company has secured the right to use its own name in China. The luxury retail brand has not operated in the country for over two decades, since a Mr. Fang Yu Chao registered his footwear company under the name Manolo and Blahnik in 1999. China has different intellectual property restrictions compared with countries such as the United States, which require companies to prove prior use or intent to use as a trademark before it can be registered. Instead, in China, it's a first-to-file jurisdiction, which meant Fang's claim to the name as the first person to trademark it in the China market in 1999 was found to be stronger under Chinese law. But just this week, the real Manolo Blahnik company announced that it had won the case at Supreme People's Court of China, or the country's highest court. "This is a meaningful victory for my uncle, our family and our team, and I want to express gratitude to the Supreme People's Court of China for its thorough and careful consideration of our long-standing case," Chief Executive Christina Blahnik, the niece of founder Manolo Blahnik, said. Manolo Blahnik, which has only been available to customers in China via third-party e-commerce platforms such as Farfetch until now, said it plans to expand its business into mainland China in the near future, though it did not disclose specific expansion locations. "From a banana plantation childhood, this holder of an honorary degree from the University of La Laguna in Tenerife, with an art school named after him on the island of La Palma, winner of multiple awards worldwide, shy of the press and even something of a hermit, is still exploring new corners of the world to conquer with his glorious creations. I suppose to be head and shoulders above the rest, a good pair of Manolos is all you need." For World Report, this is Cliona O'Flynn, barefoot in the Canary Islands.
Well, that's it for this morning. Thanks for staying with us. If you want to listen back to the programme, you can do so at rte.ie/worldreport. The editor of World Report is Elaine Devlin. We're back at the same time next week. Until then, from me, Angus Cox, and all the team, take care.